It's finally done.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and new beginnings. I'm Joel Bracken. I'm at WV Stats Guy. He's Jordan Pinto. He's at Game Day Shorts. You know, I think we thought we were going to come on here and just talk about a full-on beatdown in Lubbock, but there's more. Neil Brown's out as head coach at West Virginia University. We're recording on Sunday night. News broke Sunday late afternoon. How are you feeling, Jordan? A lot going on. How are you feeling right now?
You know, I've watched, there's a documentary. It's called The History of the Eagles, and it's about the band The Eagles, obviously. And I just remember, like, all I can think about is, like, this quote from Glenn Frey, where he was talking about when they broke up, and he said, yeah, somebody asked Don about it, and Don called it a horrible fucking relief. Right, where it's like it's a situation nobody wanted it to get here, but now that it's finally here and that it's happened, it's like everybody exhale. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I'm at. I'm just, you know, it's a sad situation because, like, you know, I think you and I were Climb Trusters long after a majority of the fan base. We really liked Neil Brown. We really wanted to make it work. And it was never a situation of, like, you know, I can't believe this shitbag is our coach, right? It's like the guy just didn't win enough. And after year six, it was time. And so what I'm feeling, I think that just about clocks it. It's a horrible relief right now.
Yeah, I think in a very similar analogy, my wife asked me as the news broke how I felt about it. And it's like, you know, I sort of equated it to like a divorce where it's like, it's a bad situation. But I, you know, it is an outcome in which hopefully this is the correct decision at the point in time. You know, it's like you're in a bad place, but hopefully this is a place in which things get better.
To that point, I remember Louis C.K. after he got divorced doing a show and, like, said that, yeah, I just got divorced, and the crowd was all like, oh, and he's like, no, don't do that. He's like, this is the happiest that I've been in, like, 5 years, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, like, and that's sort of the feeling, right?
Like, yeah.
So, yeah, it's, I mean, it's funny as we come down the stretch of the season in retrospect, like, you know, three or four games ago, we're starting to do the math and we're like, hey, two losses is very much in play in the conference. You got three teams left. You think you have a shot at beating, and, you know, you're still very much alive. And I mean, every single team in this conference, none of them wanted to win it this year. I mean, if you are ever just going to be a solid football team and go win seven games, you're going to end up in the title game. I mean, that's what the conference was this year. And you're coming down the stretch, and I don't think the Neil Brown watch was the light wasn't even blinking. And then as the season sort of unfolded, or as it sort of concluded, I guess, you know, especially even coming into the last week, there was one outcome that couldn't happen. And if you lose a close game, like, Neil Brown probably doesn't get fired. You don't know for sure, but
yeah, I don't know.
This was the one thing you couldn't do. And I mean, I don't know how much it's worth really breaking down the Texas Tech game other than to say that it was over at some point through the second quarter because they hung 29 on us in the second quarter. I think they scored like 36 or something unanswered points. I mean, there was definitely just like a momentum switch somewhere in maybe the late part of the second quarter where, like, everybody who had the game on and was at the game, I think, knew what direction the game was going to end in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we started quitting at 20-3. Fully quit, I would say, at 28-3. And yeah, it was just one of those. I mean, my first note on the game before, when I'm making my notes last night, I was just kind of thinking about it before we got the news, obviously. It was just like, outside of somebody getting seriously injured, how could that have, like, what could have gone worse yesterday, you know? I mean, we were soundly beaten, I want to say, early fourth quarter. I know Neil in his post game, of course. Well, we competed in the second half, and it's like, yeah, who the fuck cares, first of all? And then he talked about the box score doesn't look that bad. But early fourth quarter, they were doubling us up in yards. It was one of those games where it's like, dude, you need to pump the difficulty up, like Texas Tech. Like, clearly you're playing on like varsity right now. Pump that up to All-American or Heisman or something, because it just looked too easy for them. And I think that was the worst thing about yesterday is even at 6-3, you got the feeling that we were never going to stop them, and it was just only a matter of time until the dam broke, and then the dam broke, and it was bad, and we just had to sit there with, I think I texted you, is like, the worst part about this, we just had to sit here with their nuts on our forehead for the next 3 hours and take this. Like, there's nothing, because there's nothing we can do. We're clueless on offense. We're predictable. We didn't have a damn clue what to do about them on defense. Even into the third quarter, the touchdown to make it 42, I think I texted you, they ran the same concept two or three times in a row. They have two receivers on the boundary side of the field. We have nobody over the inside guy. And he just ran 5 yards and turned, just like what any of us would do on college football. What a fucking 10-year-old would do on the college football video game is like, wow, there's nobody within 20 yards of that guy. I'm just going to have him run 5 yards and stop, and I'm going to throw it to him. And it was a fitting end. I think the interception was a fitting end to the game. The game was a fitting end to an era.
It's the end of an era. Yeah. Well, first, I just want to read their drives for the game. So they had 10 drives. No field punt. Goal, field goal, touchdown, 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 interception, field goal, touchdown. So other than the interception, they got points on every single drive. Just unbelievable. Like, yeah, it's unreal. That was either 9 or 10 drives. They scored on all but one of them. My intro until we heard of the Neil Brown firing that I had written down was a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 conference, and at this rate, just WVU basketball, because they stole the show. They stole the show this week with all of the optimism of they were like your best friend buying a shiny, you know, new driver or something, and then going out and adding 20 yards to his drive, and you're like, wait, so we could just get something new and things would be better? Like, we should do that. You see what's happening over there? We're beating good teams and looking like fresh and new and exciting. And then the, you know, I'm not trying to dump on Neil Brown too much here, but then the old stale, you know, movie you've seen before happens. And maybe even one of the worst ones. I mean, yeah, probably one of the worst ones.
Possibly, yeah. In the conversation for worst one. Yeah, I thought Kirch had a great tweet of like, how can you not watch what the basketball team has done for the last 3 days? And, or like, how can you watch that and think that the status quo is just okay in football?
Yeah. I mean, if you want your basketball podcast, you need to go over to Unreasonable Doubt because Josh is handling business over there. But oh my gosh, what optimism I have on the hardwood in the new situation we have going there. And yeah, it almost, I feel like, was sort of fitting. It was all poetic how everything sort of happened over the last few days.
Where it's beautiful, like, wow, contrast. Yeah,
we should just do that, but on the football, you know? Like, so yeah, I mean, just. The team doesn't show up. I'm glad that I guess maybe this is a question. So I was going to say, I'm glad we have a bowl game because maybe we can focus a little bit more on the seniors and their last game and whatnot. Do you think in the flux of the program at a 6-6, you know, possibly a coach coming in who may be coaching another team still? I mean, do we accept a bowl bid? Like, pie in the sky, we go hire Andy Kotelnicki. He's got a Big Ten championship game and the playoffs coming up. Like, he's not obviously going to leave that. Situation like that, I mean, I think we decline the bowl game. Even if we hire a coach who's still at play or whatever, or is wrapping their season up, is there a bowl game here? Like, I don't know. It's kind of, I would hate to just take away from a senior and be like, hey, yeah, that was actually your last game, that really, really bad one. But I think it might end up being situational. I don't know. What do you think about like the bowl game possibilities?
You know, I hadn't considered even declining a bid because, like you said, this all happened like 3 hours ago. And since then, I've helped two toddlers eat their dinner and get ready for bed, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to think about stuff like that. But honestly, I don't know. I mean, I think it's all situational, and it depends probably which coaches we're talking to. And how stuff like that's shaken out. I mean, it's hard to even say because, you know, one coach might not care. you know, prospective coach, another coach might say, yeah, accept it, or yeah, decline it.
You could do interim coach, you know, for the remainder of the bowl season too.
And I think that's probably where I would lean is you do an interim coach, maybe like a Blaine Stewart or something. You know, somebody very similar situation. Well, not similar situation to what his dad got, but you know, give him a chance. He's a, you know, probably the most direct connection and representative to the program and the state on staff. And so if you're going to do this as like a swan song for the seniors, which I think we should do, right? Like you give them a chance to wash that taste out of their mouth. You maybe just put someone like him in there at interim. Because, you know, I think like if you're looking across the staff of like, you know, who would somebody new keep? Like he's probably near the top of the list just because of that connection to the culture and everything. And so, you know, having him there, if that's something he would be willing or able to do, is probably where I would lean. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
No, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to ride, I almost feel like you finish, like you, even if you hire a new coach, and I think it's important to remember that, you know, from Dana Holgorsen to Neil Brown, it was like a 3 or 4 day period, but it was December like 27th and he was hired on like January 1st. So, you know, that was a different timing with a bowl game.
It was after the bowl.
So West Virginia is probably going to be playing in a bowl. I mean, before the new year, obviously, but do you wait around to hire a coach for 30 days? I don't think you do.
No.
So yeah, maybe it's a situation where the staff remains and there's an interim, you know, some sort of situation. I mean, I don't know. I wonder what the buzz with the staff is. It's very early. I'm sure we'll hear something eventually, but you know, you just fired a defensive coordinator a couple weeks back and now you fire the head man. And I mean, obviously all those guys are going to be scrambling, looking for jobs. Neil's probably going to go somewhere else. Like, does he bring people if he's a head coach? Is he going to end up as a coordinator? Like, you know, there's so much stuff in flux where it's like, who is going to be focused on the bowl game? I think that's probably a decision that's better internal of like, hey, are all these people going to be like ants when you pick up a rock running, you know, in every which direction? Or do people want to stick it out and fight this thing to the end? It does suck for the seniors if the bowl game is not something that happens just because, you know, you earn the right to play another game and then these crazy circumstances happen. And I wouldn't want my last game to be that Texas Tech game because that sucked. I mean, that was the worst game of the season. It was the worst game of the season. I mean,
I
don't think there's anything that you can say other than that. So I don't know. It's a difficult situation. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the timeline will be if we hire somebody this week, because potentially the guy you want could be coaching in a conference championship game this week. You think he's going to be taking in any of these? I mean, I'm just saying, like, a guy could be taking interviews the week he's playing a conference championship game. I don't know. And then if you wait the additional week, I mean, maybe you see more firing sort of start to trickle in. The pool gets bigger. Like, you know, it's kind of a tricky strategic move of when you pull the trigger, when, you know, when you think the best options are out there that you can get. When do you let another, you know, when do you let a whale come available who is going to take the best candidate? There's lots of things at play, but Wren has done awesome. And I think despite all the apathy about Neil recently, I feel like the confidence in Wren Baker is there, seeing as our success on both sides of the hardwood. So, I mean, I think people have his back.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's earned some goodwill. But I also think this is football's king, right? And so this one is bigger than women's basketball, than even men's basketball. You know, he's knocked those both out of the park, but yeah, this is the one that's probably going to define his tenure, right? I mean, for better or worse, the AD's tied to the football coach. And I do think there will be some urgency for all the reasons you mentioned. You don't want to have somebody else come available where it's like, oh shit, I could have, you know, that job. Like, maybe I won't consider West Virginia. But like, let's be honest, it wouldn't be the first time that somebody took an interview conference championship week, right? Like, yeah, I mean, this stuff happens every single year. You know, and Andy Kotelnicki, which again, pipe dream. I've been pining for months that if the season goes this way, that would be my A tier target. I don't know if a conference championship or a prospective playoff run would prevent him from interviewing and accepting the job. You know, I think the tricky thing obviously is recruiting and transfer portal. All that stuff is going to happen pretty quickly now. And so, you know, like, I think even already we've started, we've seen some recruits who have announced they're reopening their recruitment. We've seen several others who, completely can't blame any of them. Can't blame any of them. It sucks, but it is what it is. You can't blame them. Have seen several others who have said they want to wait and see how it plays out. And so, like, that's the kind of sentiment where it's like, you know, if we can make a good hire quickly, like, there's a chance that the wheels don't fall all the way off here. And so I think there will be some urgency from Wren. But yeah, to your point, he's definitely earned the benefit of the doubt, and I have high confidence that he's going to, you know, find somebody good.
Yeah, all indicators are that he's done a great job with his hire so far. And, you know, in terms of the wheels falling off sort of portion of it, it's like there's never been an easier time to reload and get the kind of guys you want. And you're probably not going to have the guys you want in year one, or at least in December of year zero, you know, like just getting hired. You're going to lose guys. You're going to go pick up guys. Like any coach who's going to come and coach at West Virginia is going to have connections to multiple other teams who they've coached players. Like, there might be more than a usual year of people coming and going, but I don't think that necessarily is a bad thing. I mean, we see DeVries right now. Basketball is very different, but, you know, you're almost like, man, we just need like one or two cycles of his guys to come through and get some depth. And it's, you know, it's already the vision is starting to take place of what he wants to have out there. So, I do want to read. So, you know, just reflecting on the Neil Brown time, I was digging through some stats. I also looked, I know, friend of the pod, Jake Land, Night Stare, had some really good, he has a really good thread on Twitter right now of stats. You know, I went back, and I think the indictment on Neil has always been that he hasn't won the big game, and it's like the game against any team that's good. So I went back and just, you know, triple checked all the things. So 7 wins in his 6 years, 7 wins against teams that ended the season with a winning record. Army was the most wins, 9-3, but they were the only G5 team he ever played, which is a weird, weird thing. He only played one G5 team in 6 years.
That is weird.
So such a weird stat. So 11 P5 games pretty much every year if you throw out COVID in the regular season. And then Army, we got in a bowl game. So like no G5s, which was weird. Your other winning record teams you beat UNC, but it was in a bowl game, which I think is an asterisk. Without Drake May. I think K-State in 2019 was arguably your best win. They were a team that ended the season 8-5. And then you have a couple wins against 7-6 teams, 2023 Texas Tech, 2022 Oklahoma State, 2021 Iowa State, and you beat TCU, who was 6-4 in the COVID year. 3 ranked wins, VT in 21, they finished the season with a losing record. Iowa State in 21, they finished the season 7-6, and K-State in 20, they finished the season 4-6. 1-2 versus Pitt, 2-0 versus VT, 30-35 versus Power 5 teams. And then this was an extra layer I looked up because I just was curious. How many wins did you have by more than a possession, and how many losses did you have by more than a possession? 13 wins by more than a possession. And this is just counting P5 teams. 25 losses by more than a possession. So yeah. 35 losses total. 25 of them were by more than a possession.
I saw you put that stat out there, and I loved it, by the way, because we've been talking about that a lot. And I think it kind of cuts to the core of why Neil failed here. So some quotes from yesterday, right? That I think from his post game, even that kind of go into this too. Said there was some good and some bad. And it's just like, you know, don't beat yourself up too bad here. But yeah, that's why we're 500. He said just a bad matchup for us. And he said we competed in the second half. And I think the mentality at the core of those comments and in the stats you're talking about is that he just never really got away from the Troy mentality of we're a smaller school playing up. We're trying to punch up against everybody. And, you know, it was never, you know, what can we do to go out and kick these guys' asses? It's what can we do to make this a game in the fourth quarter? And what that does inevitably is it brings the margins to the forefront. They're not the margins anymore. They're the things that swing every game. And when you don't win the margins, you lose a lot of games that you maybe could have or even should have won. And I just think he never got away from that small school mentality. And that leads to results like those you described. I mean, and it just not anywhere near good enough. I mean, shit, dude, we got like our six losses this year, right? Blown out by Penn State.
At home,
by Penn State at home, blown out by Kansas State at home. Multiple score losses to Iowa State and Baylor at home, blown out by Texas Tech, absolutely shit stomped. I mean, again, what could have gone worse? And Pitt, where you're up 10 with 3 minutes to go and you lose the game. Those are our six losses this year. And it's just like, just could not be more of an indictment on I feel like the way that he approaches the game. And again, I feel like the core of all of his issues is the small school mentality of, you know, we're trying to slay giants here. Not that we don't belong here necessarily, but just that like, well, you know, there's going to be a lot of one score. How many times have we said a lot of one score single possession games in this league? And it's like, dude, there doesn't have to be like, you know, teams, like you said, teams, 25 of our fucking 35 losses were by more than a possession. Like how many of those teams were significantly more talented than us? Like this year, I just said we got blown out or we got beat by multiple scores five times. How many of those teams were more talented than us? Penn State?
Penn State is if you're saying he's playing the giant slayer role, Penn State's the only giant on our schedule.
Yeah.
That's it. There's no other team that is.
There is no other team.
Every team has multiple losses. Every team has like three losses otherwise on our schedule.
There is no other team on the schedule where the talent gap is so significant where you should be approaching it of like, man, I hope we can hang around for the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And that's the core of why he failed.
You know what's crazy too, and it's so funny. I was looking back into, you know, through the 6 years. It's so strange to even look back into 2019, the very first year, because we started off 3-1 in the Neil Brown era. We had that really ugly loss to Missouri. You beat NC State, crazy. Then you beat Kansas. You're 3-1, and you look at the rest of the year. You play four ranked teams in that season. You kept it close with Texas, who was 11th at the time. Oklahoma blasted you. Okay, whatever. You kept it close with Baylor, who was number 12 at the time, a field goal game. And you kept it a touchdown game with Oklahoma State, who was ranked at the time. And it's like the regression of this year. It's like we're just getting blasted by anyone who comes into town. If you flip the coin and we decide we're not competing that week. It is just a crazy thing. But yeah, I totally agree with the mentality. I don't feel like many coaches at the Power 5 level talk in the way that like he talked about like Penn State, where it's just like, hey, we'll give it our best shot. We're probably going to lose that one, was kind of the vibe. And it's like,
They got a lot of NFL guys. And it's like, okay.
It's like, cool. That can be reality. But you are like the head motivator of this. You know, like you can't be saying that, because if you don't believe you can win, the other guys aren't going to believe they can win. Like, no power, like very, very few. I don't feel like I've heard it very much at all. Power schools are talking about other power schools. Do you think teams like, I don't know, Arkansas and the SEC are talking about half the teams on their schedule in the SEC like that? Because I don't feel like they are. I mean, it's like, yeah, they might be better, but I don't feel like they're being like, oh, they're in another league than us. Like, whatever. It's impossible. Yeah. We should be, and we're at home. We played them before. You know, those are the sort of situations where you're like, I don't know why this is such a realm of impossibility to win a game or compete in a game like that, to feel like you have a shot at the end. So.
Very frustrating.
It's frustrating, but it's a new era. I think there's hot boards getting put out everywhere. I mean, I think we talked, Kotal Nicki would be a pretty dream pick. I mean, I think we have to mention the two obvious ones. Rich Rodriguez, Jacksonville State currently. Would be absolutely incredible for the content. Just unreal amount of hilarity just if he came back. And splitting of the fan base. So, he's had some success at Jacksonville State. And then your other one's Jimbo Fisher, obvious West Virginia, Northern West Virginia ties. He's not been coaching since he was canned at Texas A&M, and they paid him $1 bajillion to sit on his couch instead of the sideline. Mm-hmm. And then I think maybe at least half worth mentioning is Nick Saban, also Northern West Virginia ties. I mean, yeah, of course you have to call the guy and make him say no, but like I don't know if there's really a reality and that's a real option.
It's not.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the obvious, the very, very obvious. And then what do you think the next level of, maybe more realistic?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think of those, my preference would be Rich, to be honest. Because Saban's not a real option. But I would prefer Rich to Jimbo, I think, just because he has been coaching. And, I mean, Jacksonville State's a brand new FBS school. And he's got him in a conference championship game, and he won 8 or 9 games last year. It's tough to jump up a level. You don't have the resources of your peers, and he's winning anyways. And it kind of feels like, I don't know. Next tier, I mean, Kotelnicki again would be my A1. It seems like. Like Chesney at James Madison is an option. Summerall at Tulane, Odom at UNLV are some popular names being thrown around. I don't know if I have a super preference among those guys. I mean, maybe be more productive. Like, do we want to talk? Like, what would you be looking for? Like, what is the ideal candidate for you?
Yeah, that's good because I think there's a few. I think there's a few like. One way or the other topics with this. So the first of all is West Virginia connection. And that's very important to some. I think we are a unique program. But I also sometimes wonder if that is a positive way to look at our program because we want to be comparable to Iowa State or Kansas State or Texas Tech or teams like that, that we feel like end up having more success than us recently, but I don't really see why it should be much different. Our comparison to those teams. The West Virginia uniqueness is that you talk about playing for a state, you are the pro team for a state, you have the spotlight on you. That's a positive thing. You are the local NFL team or whatever it might be. Yeah. You are the local pro team. I think that's a good thing. So that's like the understanding. And then of course, the coal mining, West Virginia culture, all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Do you have a preference West Virginia connection or not? Is that a deal breaker for you? Or is that like a, cause Neil Brown obviously did not have a West Virginia connection. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. Dana did not. Also, then you look back, Bill Stewart did, Rich Rod did,
No, definitely not a deal breaker. I think you just have to look at basketball. DeVries does not have a West Virginia connection, obviously. And that seems to be going just fine. I think like the connection with Neil is like, oh, he's a Kentucky guy. He gets the culture. And I think he did, I don't think that was a problem. But I think more than West Virginia connection or, anything like that, you need somebody who has an edge, right? Like Neil talked a lot about how, we're a blue collar people, we're a blue collar program. But we never, and we played hard, but we didn't play with that edge. Like, we didn't have an edge.
No.
And so, I think that would be almost at the top of my list. I mean, obviously, you want somebody who knows what they're doing X's and O's wise. So I think, whether you go offensive guy or defensive guy, somebody who has a proven identity of here's what I'm going to do, just because that is the baseline for being able to recruit. You got to know what you're trying to do to be able to recruit the guys who can fit what you're trying to do. But I think, I want somebody with an edge. I think that's kind of why, if you're going reach or like with the West Virginia connection guys, Rich Rod or Jimbo, like Rich Rod's teams always had that edge where it's just like, dude, we're just like a little bit nasty. I think that's something that the fan base identifies with more so, especially at this point than, I'm from the area. Is people who have that edge, people who are going to go out and fight, people who are going to punch up, people who are okay being the little guy punching up against the big guy, people who are going to go out and step on your throat when you're down. You know, play with a little bit of that toughness, a little bit of that nastiness. I don't think the West Virginia connection is a deal breaker at all for me.
I think it's a good point, the edge. I mean, like, and I think the mentality of your coach, if you're a great coach, it bleeds into your team. Yep. And you look at a lot of teams, it's been the easiest poster child of this year, but Kurt Cignetti at Indiana, dude says, hey, don't care where I am, I win. My teams win. I get our guys in winning positions. And we need a guy like that where I feel like Neil, you know, for a successful, air quote, successful head coach to be at his level, he almost had that opposite mentality of the, like, despite all odds, we will win the game. Neil was always like, you know, made sure the reporters understood all the caveats to the situation. I feel like, you know, I would always remind you, he would be the first to remind you that we only played one G5 team in his tenure. Yeah, that sucks. The schedule stinks.
Sure, we lost six games, but we won six games too. And it's like, buddy, who the fuck cares, man?
Yeah, so I agree. I don't think West Virginia connection's a must. I think edge in terms of personality, in terms of motivator is important. I mean, obviously, like, recruiting's always going to be important for West Virginia in terms of if someone could come in and bring us up a level, that'd be amazing. But I don't know, you know, what that person might be.
That's Jimbo. Yeah. Like, if you're going for purely that, it's Jimbo, just based on the pedigree. But yeah, sorry, go ahead. I cut you off.
No, as I said, I mean, you have these sort of categories. So, like, recruiting, that'd be Jimbo. There's the X's and O's. Maybe that guy's Kotelniki. Your edge motivator guy. I mean, maybe that's Rich Rod if you want to stick with that sort of, you know, analogy. And then I think maybe the fourth hidden attribute in there is, like, brand building, in terms of, like, think of what Coach Prime did at Colorado in this new NIL era. Like, if you could have a head coach on the Pat McAfee show once a week, that's important. Like, Neil Brown's not that guy. Neil Brown was not the guy who could go and chat with, like, we happen to have one of the, like, most prominent sports personalities is an absolute rider for West Virginia. If you could get a cool guy in, a head coach who could go and bullshit with him once a week on his show, like, That might be something. That's like a little hidden trait in there. So, lots of things to consider. I think looking down these lists, you know, I'm looking at the different hot boards. You know, another name I saw or I've seen a few times is Marshall coach Charles Huff. Is that a yes or a no for you? I mean, is that do you listen to that? He's had SEC and Big Ten assistant experience.
That's a no for me. He's fine. He's having success there. He seems fun. When they played Ohio State, the Tutors thing, obviously that got some national play. So he is probably a guy who might be able to do that brand building like you're talking about, go on and bullshit with McAfee. But I don't know if I could get past him coming from Marshall. You know, especially like if he came here and sucked for 2 years, like, That's a guy who would run out of goodwill quickly.
Would you just initially, not looking at any names, would you rather a power program coordinator or a G5 successful head coach? Or would it just depend?
I mean, always depends, right? Always context, always shades of gray. But I think successful head coach. You know, well, fuck, I don't know. I mean, because Dana was a Power 5 coordinator and you know, his teams played with a little bit of edge and a little bit of fuck you. And you know, I always kind of hated the way that we treated him, too. So, I mean, I think it depends. I mean, it feels weird to say because it feels like edge is such an intangible quality.
Yeah, you can't measure it. It's not. We can't pull that up in PFF. Like,
no. Like, who got that? Who got that dog in him? Right. Like, that's not something that you can just, like, it's not on somebody's resume. Maybe it should be. But it's not. But I don't care. G5 head coach or P5 coordinator. I just want somebody who's got a little bit of an it factor to him. Somebody who's gonna, you know, has a little bit of swagger. A little bit of swagger, a little bit of bravado, a little bit of fuck you. Because, you know, I think that's That's when our programs have thrived, is when we have that fuck you factor. Like, fuck you. You know, you're coming in here. Fuck you. You're not going to beat us at all. Instead of, well, you know, it was just a bad matchup for us. Like, that's not your whole fucking job to, overcome bad matchups and figure out, hey, you know what's a bad matchup? Fucking Texas Tech's defense sucked. Yep. They sucked. They sucked, and we scored 3 points on them when it mattered.
Yeah, you don't get a cry bad matchup when you hired the coaches and picked the players.
Like, no.
I just don't feel like that's a fair in year six. You don't get to do that. It's just not an acceptable answer, and it's one we heard too much. The bad matchup was they play better football than us. That was the bad matchup, which happened too often.
So, yeah, no. So I don't necessarily care about where the guy's coming from, whether it's G5, P5, FCS. I don't care. I just want somebody with a little bit of fuck you. You know, I think, like, for the time and the place, Neil Brown was the right hire, right? 2019, we're coming off of Dana. We basically hired the anti-Dana. Yep. And it made sense because a lot of the, you know, I mean, people wanted Dana gone for whatever reason. I know why. But the guy went 61-41 in 8 seasons, you know? And, like, just looking back at that now, it's like, Jesus Christ, like, what would you give for that right now? And so, you know, I get the Neil Brown hire. I think it was the right hire at the time. I was really excited about it. Rode with the guy for the entire time. But I think now, I don't know if you necessarily go anti-Neil Brown, but you have to have somebody with a fuck you. Honestly, I think that's one of the best things about DeVries, right, is that he's got a little bit of Beeline and a little bit of Huggins, right? Like, our team plays super hard defensively, and so it's like the best of the Huggins teams, but we run a fucking offense. And so it's like, you know, some of the best of the Beeline teams. And who sees what ultimately happens, you know, because the Big 12 is going to be brutal, right? But, like, he's got a little bit of that it factor. And so, you know, again, it's hard to measure edge or hard to measure fuck you or how much dog somebody has in them. But I think that would be my number one, is like, we got to get somebody who's going to come back in here and is not going to see West Virginia as, hopefully we can finish top half of the table in the Big 12. Like, you know, somebody who's going to come in here and be like, fuck yeah, you can win the conference at West Virginia. Fuck yeah, you can make the playoffs at West Virginia. Like, let's go, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that's maybe the most important. You know, it's like, if you're learning from this experience with Neil Brown, I feel like that's the one thing that he didn't have. He was organized. It seemed like, you know, he had all those sort of things down, but just didn't have the raw edge. And I don't know if that was it's a motivating thing or just a learn by example kind of thing, where it's like, he's not the kind of guy who has like a strong edge. Rich Rod, I'm sure you can feel it if you're in a room, and same with Dana. Like, they you know, they sort of carry themselves in that way. I'm just going to read a couple other names, you know, on some of these hot boards. So one of them is Jamie Chadwell, Liberty, has experience at Coastal Carolina, and Liberty. He had 13-0 in 2023. He has no P4 experience. Another name we see is Shannon Dawson. He's the Miami offensive coordinator right now. So if you've watched any of them with Cam Ward, pretty exciting offense this year. They got some guys, number one offense in the country, you know. And that's, he was an assistant here.
Yeah, so there's a West Virginia connection, and I'm intrigued by the idea, but I also think you need to be careful to separate. And honestly, you probably need to do this a little bit with Rich Rod too, of like the peaks, you know, like the best of Miami this year, how much of that is like Shannon Dawson called an awesome play versus how much of that is Cam Ward made an awesome play.
Yeah.
And their receivers made an awesome play. Right. But I will say, you know, the one thing about that is, and, you know, again, continuing to dump on Neil, Shannon Dawson seems to embrace that chaos, right? Like, Neil Brown went outside of his comfort zone one time in 6 years and won 9 games and was like, nah, we're not going to run that back. I would like for Garrett Green to be a pocket passer, or to be more of a pocket passer. Shannon Dawson just lets Cam Ward cook, you know? And so something to that. That's an interesting one though. That's definitely
interesting. And he has the connection. So he was an assistant here, from 2011 to 2014 under Dana.
Yep.
So definitely an interesting connection there. He's had some different stops, Kentucky, Southern Miss, and Houston.
clearly knows Florida. Like, you have to be able to recruit Florida to be successful here. Interesting one. I'm sure we'll kick the tires on it.
Yeah, that one could be in play. Some other ones I'm seeing here, Barry Odom from UNLV. Has had some success there, and no connection, but he's the go-go offense, if you've seen any clips on them. Interesting one there. Bill Clark's another one. He was a UAB coach. It looks like he had to take some time off. He temporarily retired for a couple years with back issues. Healthy again, no direct connection, but he had UAB going. He's a 60-30 coach, 60-30 record as a coach. So he wins. My final two I'm seeing here on this board, Ryan Silverfield at Memphis. Kind of a quiet, I did not recognize the name, but you know, he's kind of got Memphis going. He's had them at 20 wins and 5 losses. Consecutive 10 win seasons for the first time in team history. He has NFL experience as well. And then the last one I'm seeing here is Western Kentucky coach Tyson Helton. Got WKU into some successful back-to-back seasons. A proximity thing close to West Virginia and maybe some of your
definite offensive identity there. I don't know. I don't know about Helton. I'm just reading a couple other names from the 24/7 list. GJ Kinney at Texas State. Really good offense, obviously, at Texas State. They play a fun brand of football. But you know, who knows? I think he just signed an extension, so could be tough there. Jim Mora at UConn. Is a name that they list of, you know, like, and I like the first sentence, nobody believes Mora got back into coaching to remain at UConn. I don't know about that. Let's see here. Who else is on the short list? Couple defensive names. I don't know. I'm generally of the mind that I would rather my head coach be the offense guy and just hire a good defensive coordinator, as opposed to the other way around. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that? Do you have preference, offense guy, defense guy?
I don't have strong preference, but I just feel like good offense beats good defense. So yeah, like you want your better offense. You know, you want your team sort of centered with a, like, we're going to score a lot of points mindset. I feel like that's going to get, like, yeah, there is the old adage of defense wins championships and all that, but I don't know. I mean, and all the great coaches have always, like, transitioned too. Like, you know, Saban was a very defensive-minded head coach, I feel like, for a long time. And then, you know, all of a sudden their teams are high-scoring and prolific as sort of the style changed. So, I don't think it's really a big preference for me, but maybe a slight lean offensive.
Yeah. What about Tony Gibson?
As a head coach? I don't know. I mean, obviously strong connection. That'd be an interesting one.
Definitely has to fuck you, but.
He does. But also, I feel like there were plenty of times when, even as a DC, fans weren't always on board with things. I don't know. I would say maybe not. I'd say maybe let's go new era. But, you know, maybe we'll just get Rich Rod and him and you know, just do the thing. why not?
Here's the weird thing is, so, like, you know, I think the Rich Rod thing, people talk about it fracturing the fan base. Like, how big of a deal do you think that would really be? Like, if, you know, obviously not worth talking about why, but, like, if he comes in and, you know, wins 18 games in his first two years, like, how many people do you really think are going to be still anti-Rich Rod?
I think people that would be anti-Rich Rod, if things were going good, well, he would win them over quickly.
Quickly.
And then I think if things started, like, I don't know. It's just, he's a West Virginia guy. He's been here for the good times. He's been here for the best times, arguably.
The best. And, oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
You know, it's, some people, I guess, cannot forgive what happened a long time ago at this point. I mean, it's been a long time. It's been like 17 years or something.
That's right. 17. Good man.
I mean, it's been a long time, and I don't know if that's the best we can do, but
I don't either.
I'm going to support the team no matter who it is. So, like, you know, it wouldn't be my first pick, but if that's the way we're going, I'm going to open up a meme folder, and there's going to be a lot of content coming out for that era, because, man, it'll be
coming back to finish what he started, baby.
Jeez,
coming back to finish what he started.
did you see Kirch's tweet today about do you know the sort of like running joke about the, like, you know, the Cole Rush jerseys?
Yeah. Oh, incredible. Yeah.
He says incredible. December 6th, 2024, halftime of the basketball game, West Virginia's beating Georgetown by 20. Kill the lights, and the coal mine elevator bell rings. Rich Rod walks out of the carpet wearing a miner's helmet. Don't tell me that
one. Don't tell me that would be badass. Kirch thrives in situations like this. He's been really good the last couple of days.
He's on a heater.
He's on a heater. Yeah. So ranking prospect, like, do you, you know, so for me, if we're going to go Jimbo or Rich Rod, I would prefer Rich Rod. I think of the rest, my first pick would be Kotelnicki. I don't know preferences after that. Maybe Summerall at Tulane. I don't know how realistic that is or if we're even going to talk to him, but dude has won everywhere. I think the concern there is, you know, obviously he has jumped around a little bit. And so, you know, mm-hmm. if he comes here and is good for 2 years, like, he's probably just going to leave. So I don't know. I mean, do you have like a, like on the Joel hot board, like what, like who would be at the top of your hot board?
It'd be Kotelnicki. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
I really think he would be my top pick. You look at what Kansas did over recent years, and you look at, there's wrinkles in it in Penn State this year. I don't think it's fully unleashed, but the dude is not a you would not want to scheme against this guy if you're playing against him. It's a strong identity. It's sort of in the same vein. It's what's the word I'm looking for here? But it's like creative. It's inventive. It's the same way Rich Rod sort of changed college football with the spread offense. I mean, I feel like this is a wrinkle of keeping teams off balance the way that they've done things. You know, it's different. It's exciting. I would be so excited day one with him. Like, so excited.
Yeah. 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 It's new age. It's new age triple option. In some cases, quadruple option. And you know, I think the like Penn State, obviously, you know, they've 11-1, they're going to play in a conference championship. They're going to be in the playoff. And obviously there's a talent gap between us, but I think even at Kansas, like the thing that stuck out to me that just is in such stark contrast, like think about what a fucking slog it is to watch like our offense. Like, creative for us is like, oh, we're going to shift two guys from the left to the right and line up in a different formation pre-snap and then run the same play that we've run 150 other times. Yeah. And it just feels so predictable and it's stale. And like, nothing feels easy for us, right? Like, it never feels like we have dudes who are like wide open where it's like, oh, we just drew up a great play there and it mm-hmm. worked and this guy's wide open. And I think that, you know, from his time at Kansas and from this year at Penn State, that is just something that always stands out to me about watching Kotelnicki coach teams play, is that there are, you know, multiple plays a game. You know, in some games, a couple plays a drive where it's just like, dude, I just outflanked you. I just outflanked you. And this was like, this play was an easy 15-yard gain for us because of the way I drew it up. And we just haven't had that in 6 years. And so, yeah, I think he would be at the top of my board too.
Think
has about been, this, has been for some time.
Think about the state of Kansas football. And I was reliving it as I was counting up our wins over the years and looking back at records. Think of how stale and just like ruined Kansas football was. He went there in 2021, first year with Lance. you know, they didn't have a ton of success that year, but even the next year, that was when they beat us, you know, sort of right there at the beginning of the season. They were, I think, 5-0 or something, and then, you know, didn't really finish the season like
Daniels
they wanted.
Daniels got hurt, the wheels fell off, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, turn something out of nothing, and that's, you know, and it was with a lot of scheme. I mean, yeah, they finally got some players in there who could make a difference, but it wasn't like Kansas never had players in all the other years. Like, they had some guys who were talented. They just weren't a good team. That offense was not fun to play against. So, yeah, he would be high on my list. I think the coordinator in Miami would also be – I think that's an interesting thing just because he's been in Morgantown for several years. I mean, Miami's, like, by some metrics, the top offense in the country this year. I mean, I think that's not nothing. That's Shannon Dawson I'm talking about. But I'll be honest, I kind of just trust Wren. I've never been a huge, like, hot board evaluator of, like, who we should be hiring. I will leave that to the guys who we pay a lot of money to make these decisions. And I feel like I trust Brent to do a good job. He's done a good job so far. Whoever he picks, I'm going to be excited about it. I mean, it's a new beginning. It's a new era and hopefully new results or just a new vibe. I think no matter what, the current situation was just growing stale and we need something different.
Yeah, if we wanted people to show up next year, we needed something different. Otherwise, this is going to be 30,000 to 35,000 sickos for six home games, which is not ideal. It's fun, but it's not ideal. I'm in the same boat. Kotelniki would be my pipe dream, but outside of that, I'm gonna trust Mr. Baker and his infinite shoe swag to knock this one out of the park.
Do you watch any Big 12 this weekend?
I watched a lot of Big 12 this weekend because our game was so shitty. And so, dude, I put our game in quad, like I moved to quad view. I took us off the big screen early second quarter. Just because it was so clear that it was going to be bad. And I was like, I might as well watch some other games. Yeah. So yeah, let's run through it. So we got smoked. Kansas surprisingly got smoked. You know, I think I missed. I had Kansas in the parlay there. I figured they would keep running the thing. We caught them at the peak of the market and forgot that Baylor is probably the hottest team in the conference right now. And Baylor fucking blew them out. I mean, it was never close.
Yeah, I didn't watch this one just because it was on the same time as ours and the Ohio State game. And I ended up watching more Ohio State down the stretch, but Baylor's sneaky coming to the finish line at 8-4. I feel like they kind of snuck up on everybody there and ended up decent
is,
season. I mean,
is this an Aranda Neil Brown 2023 smoking mirror season? And like maybe he's saved a job for like a year, but it's gonna suck again next year. Or do you think that
it's he surely saved his job. I mean, they were 2-4. And he rolled off six straight to end the year. He definitely saved the job. So interesting Baylor moving into next year. And then when you really look back, their losses weren't bad, other than the Utah game, maybe. They lost to Colorado, BYU, and Iowa State. Three teams that tied atop the table. So, Baylor, as annoying as they are, they're lingering and still good. Get to 8 wins on the season. We'll be going for 9 in the bowl game. You watch? Oh, Friday night there was Colorado. By the time I turned it on, it was over. They won 52-0 against
Oklahoma State. Yeah. So it was Friday at like noon. I watched it. And Oklahoma State's first drive, I don't think it was their first play, but it was the first series. They threw a pick to Travis Hunter, and I was like, okay, so much for that plus 85,000 parlay that I put in. Colorado scored right away. Yeah, I mean, it was over early. It was over early.
Yeah, so Colorado did what they had to do to make it to the conference championship, but the chips did not fall in their favor. Utah beat UCF Friday as well. That game did not matter.
Which is weird because Neil just told me last week that our win against UCF was a quality win against a good program. Now they're 4-8. They lost to the second worst team in the fucking conference.
Yeah, maybe Neil should get into politics.
Oh, man. Dude, he would be elite. Yeah, he would be elite at that.
Other games on Saturday, you got the Arizona State rivalry. Arizona State, in similar fashion as Colorado, just got up early and often. It was 35-0 at half in a rivalry game. It's nasty work.
Mm-hmm.
They put them away 49-7. I think the best game, well, the game I watched a lot of, it was a pretty entertaining game, and I think a feel-good game for Iowa State. If you don't despise them, they finally got over the hump of 10 wins. They had not had a 10-win season in like 130-some years. And they handle it against a rival. I feel like that's a cool moment for a program. Did you watch any of the fourth quarter of this game? Did you see the Avery Johnson safety? Just insane. Like, it was like at least a 20-yard safety. He was, you know, backpedaling, and then he turned his shoulder and was running away. And it's like, why are you losing so, you know, he was just losing ground. And he ends up in the end zone, and then he's like, realizes that like three guys are coming at him and tries to throw the ball away. And he's so far back, he can't get the ball back to the line of scrimmage. So, and he's like running on, he's running to his left, has to throw it with his right, doesn't get the ball to the line of scrimmage, gets a safety in the end zone. For intentional grounding. Yeah. And I feel like that was a very consequential portion of the game where Iowa State just kind of, you know, then they could kick the field goal, go up 8, and that was kind of it. But that was the weirdest play, though, because it was like a 20-yard loss safety where it was just like, why are you backpedaling? Why are you going?
What are you doing? Yeah.
I don't know. That was an odd one.
Avery Johnson, anointed early, perhaps, as the king of the conference.
Not a good weekend for Kansas State current or former quarterbacks, Will Howard. Sorry.
dude. What? Oh, horrible. Horrible. Yeah. I will say, so that was the only, I needed Ohio State 6.5 to hit my plus 600 parlay. That was my only miss. So, yeah, fuck Will Howard.
Man. So, yeah, Arizona State and Iowa State, they handle business. They go to the conference championship game. Just like we all picked, because Arizona State was picked literally last in the preseason poll. They go to play Iowa State in the championship game. Both teams will have an outside-in shot of making the playoff, but I don't know. It's going to depend on other results as well, even if the Big 12 champion gets in the playoff, which is wild.
It was my understanding, and this is clearly not accurate, but it was my understanding that if you win one of the Power Four, you get an automatic bid. And that is not the case.
It's the top five conference champions get an auto bid. The top four of them get the first round bye. So, Boise might get a bye. I mean, that's the reality. Your top four conference, highest ranked conference champions get a bye. This will be the stress test. This is the first year of the playoff. I mean, I think my gripe is with the conference size. I think it's going to just be stupid stuff every year where we're going to have like some 10-0 team that hasn't played anybody somehow, but plays in a premier conference. Makes no sense, but that's going to happen often. And then, we're going to see this playoff funny business a lot, but I'm actually really excited for the playoff. There are not 12 teams deserving of the playoff this year, and we're going to put like at least 8 of them in there anyway. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think there are going to be some good games. I don't know. Do you have any dark horse, national champion dark horse? Oregon's your only undefeated team.
I did just look, and Pitt did do the funny thing yesterday and lost 5 straight then the season. So yeah, wanted to call that out. So it's good that it's not them. Dark horse, dude, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if Ohio State just wins it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Oregon, it feels like, is the most complete team. They have a good quarterback. Ohio State probably has the best roster, but I don't think they have a good quarterback.
I was told the SEC is the best conference, and I don't know if there's an SEC team that can win the title.
I think Alabama could if they make it. Are they going to make it?
They're probably not going to make it. I mean, I think they are on the outside looking in. It's between them and Ole Miss for like the last spot, and Ole Miss has done better against like every common opponent, but I kind of feel like Alabama will get in over them just because it's Alabama. Lane Kiffin tweeted a funny thing explaining why Ole Miss is better.
I saw that.
We'll see.
I saw Shane Beamer advocating for South Carolina to get in.
I think there was an interesting quote from McGuire, the Texas Tech coach, after our game, where he was talking about how, you know, the media sort of biases generally towards the SEC and the Big Ten, and we talk about how good they are. But if you look at every conference in the country, it could be won by a newcomer. Oregon, which was a Pac-12 team, could win the Big Ten. SMU could win the ACC. Arizona State could win the Big 12. Texas could win the SEC. Four teams who are not in the ACC or Big Ten could step into them and win the four power conferences.
Yeah.
Which is just like a testament to like how insane college football is in general.
You know? I mean, that is one thing that I know we've talked about a little bit. The transfer portal has done is it has sapped the depth of the blue bloods a little bit. Those guys are still going to recruit better than anybody, but you know, the 5-star, 4-star freshmen who don't see a path to playing time are going to go somewhere else. And it has kind of boosted the second tier, I guess I would, you know, is probably the way to think about it. So I don't know. I mean, no, I don't think there are any, like, I don't think SMU or Indiana or like Tennessee can win the title.
Texas might be able to.
I think it's probably still going to be one of those top couple, Oregon, Ohio State, Texas. I don't think Penn State can, just because Drew Aller is such a fucking soft ass motherfucker. When the lights are bright, he just never plays well against good teams. He just coasts on the roster against shitty teams.
I do think it's insane that, you know, if you would have asked us earlier in the year, you know, moving to a 12-team playoff, people always made the gripe. Well, it's like, well, Alabama and Georgia and Clemson will be in every single one of them. If it wasn't by some luck of Miami losing yesterday, Clemson might be on the outside looking in. Bama might be on the outside looking in. I think Georgia's safe. It only took them 8 overtimes to squeak it. I mean, like, this season has been exceptionally crazy. It'd been really nice if you just got a hot team in the Big 12. That'd been really nice. So maybe we'll catch it next blue moon of all of this happening. Yeah. Or maybe this is the new normal now, and if you win 7 of your 9 games in the Big 12, you have a shot to go to the playoff. Because, hey, that could be us. That could be anybody.
Why not us? I mean, look, I would back Texas or Oregon right now, just because I think Texas has the best defense and Oregon is probably the most complete team. So,
yeah, I think the two of them and Ohio State would be my three most realistic national champions.
Yep.
But we will see. What about Big 12 title game, Arizona State, Iowa State? Who you got? Who do you think?
I mean,
opening line for this game.
Yeah. Look at that.
Arizona State 2.5
favored.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, like, I think Iowa State might have fewer weaknesses, but I think Arizona State has more strengths. Like, Arizona State with that running game and Scataboo and the quarterback, like, I mean, they're a problem to play against. The defense is playing well. I think I would probably lean Arizona State.
Yeah, I didn't – until I finally watched Arizona State over the last few weeks, I just felt like I was in the dark all year, but I kind of like them. They got some guys I like. I mean, Scatabo, Leavitt at quarterback. I mean, I think they got some dogs. I don't want Rocco to get hurt for when he's in Morgantown next year with head coach Anthony Becht.
Yeah, what about Anthony Becht? Did you see that he responded to the tweet with like a bunch of dots, like, "Hey, buddy, I'm available."
So is his coaching experience only from the XFL? Is that,
I think, is it XFL or USFL?
Does it matter? I mean, I don't even know.
But yeah, just for we're a professional podcast for accuracy's sake. You know?
I don't know the difference between the two.
But yeah, he is a head coach there.
I just don't know. Like, there's probably so many things to jump to a power four level from having like no recruit. You know, there's I don't know. That feels like a lot, but I'm here for it. Also, I don't know. That could be fun. Get Rocco in Morgantown for two or three seasons, and
you think he would do that?
Maybe. I don't think we would hire him with no experience. I think he's got to coach somewhere else before he comes here. That just feels very abrupt. Because if you take his son out of the equation, would you hire him? I don't think so. And his son could tear his ACL in spring ball. And, you know, I just feel like that's too big of a gamble to be like, package deal or get a quarterback and a coach. Quarterback's going to be there 2 years.
It worked in basketball.
It worked in basketball. Yeah, I'll shut up now. You're right. It did actually
work in basketball. Clearly, this is not anecdotal. This is scientific. We are 100% hit rate when new coaches bring their kid with them.
Yeah. Though DeVries had like 20-plus years of coaching experience before his son was
Well, details are not important. Anyways. Yeah, I think this is going to happen probably kind of quick, man. National Signing Day is, what, 3 weeks? It's like December 18th or something like that?
Well, there's the one in February, but that's not the one we're thinking of, right? But yeah, I mean, I don't think there's
It's Wednesday, December 4th. Never mind.
It's in like 3 days.
Oh no.
2 days by the time you're hearing it.
Oh no. Nobody's going to sign. You know what though, dude, I saw some tweets in the Discord regarding recruiting and portal is like, it's not like we have, I mean, maybe like if I was going to pick one guy on each side of the ball, Jaheim and Trotter. But other than that, like, who can we not afford to lose? You know, who do we have that is not, like, I don't want to say replacement level, but not replaceable?
Yeah. How much longer does Mulba have in his?
I think he might be done.
Dang. Yeah, Trotter's probably.
Thomas rematch is good, but Milam's gone. Yeah, Mulba is. Classed. Hold on. Why is my computer not working? He signed in 2020. So I don't know if he gets a COVID year. He might have 1 year left.
Okay.
Gotcha. But.
Yeah. Well, anyways. Whoever also is coming in, like I said, might bring some baggage with him in. So.
And it's Gucci.
And it's Gucci. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm sure we'll be back to pod in the next week or so to discuss. Hopefully it's a couple of days so I can get back from my org trip so we can
break it down. No, I think it's going to happen pretty quick. What is the DeVries was like 10 or 11 days. Like you said, Neil Brown was 4 days. Yeah, so, I mean...
I bet Ren's having some sleepless... Ren's probably having some sleepless nights right now. I mean, I'm sure he's working every hour, every minute.
Overtime, but you know what? I guarantee that the phone calls he's making are not the phone calls... Not the first phone calls that he's made to these people.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, he's been...
Diligence. Due diligence, yeah. So, sure. Anyways, all right, feels like we're done. Okay. New era. You know, I wish I could say that it's been... fun with Neil Brown, but we were both shitty and boring. And I think, you know, my baseline for the next coach, aside from having a little fuck you factor, is if we're going to suck, be exciting.
Yeah.
You know, Neil Brown, 30 and 35 against fucking Power 5 teams. We got outscored on average 3 out of his 6 years. It's just, on paper, it was the right one, but it hasn't been that great. I've still had fun. In case Neil Brown is concerned, I've still had fun at the games.
Yeah.
But
I'm sure he appreciates.
Yeah. Anyways. Yep.
Yep, new era, same West by Pod, new era. We'll reload and figure out what's coming next. Yeah, I'm sure we'll have some episodes coming out soon. Coaching decisions, bowl decisions, all the good stuff, off-season stuff. So thank you guys, as always, for listening. Make sure you're tapped into Smoking Musket Discord, where news breaks like wildfire, and you will get a notification the second it happens, if you would like that.
That's right.
Make sure you listen to Unreasonable Doubt, because the basketball team is neither boring or bad. So big vibes over there. The spreadsheets love them. They're into the top 50 of KenPom. I think that's ahead of schedule. I'm still not going to say you should expect a ton this year, but tune into Unreasonable Doubt, and he will get you right on your West Virginia hoops knowledge. That's all I got.
I said DeVries, he needs a month before we get crazy. It's been a month, and if we don't make the Final Four, I'm going to be pretty disappointed.
You said
fucking good, baby. Let's go.
You said the football hire would define Wren. Is that still in play if we're like a perennial Final Four basketball program?
No, at that point we fold the football program and pour all resources to DeVries. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. No. All right. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you probably kind of soon.
Yeah.
One, two, three.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with autopay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.